first of all, I'm hoping that you are not confused as much with the singer and the astronaut these days, but are being honored for your own work.
Yeah, I do get confused all the time.
Tell us a little bit about this illness, aplastic anemia. What is it?
Yeah, so it's a very serious blood disease in which the bone marrow stops working. The bone marrow is the factory that produces the blood cells, the red cells, the white cells, and the platelets. And in aplastic anemia, the bone marrow is replaced by fat, and none of those blood cells get produced. And it's a disease of young people. It's historically, it's been recognized for over 100 years and really has been universally fatal in its severe form up until recently.
So you put together a whole study to look at this. How did that all work?
Yeah, well, we've been actually studying the disease for decades, many, many decades at this point. And it really started in the dark days when patients did very poorly, partly because I had just come to NIH and was looking for interesting clinical problems to study. And there were some data coming out of Europe suggesting that patients could be treated not just by transplant, which is an effective treatment for those patients who have good donors, but by medical therapy. And so I started to try that here at the clinical center, and it worked. So we've been working on various ways of treating the disease for the last 20 or 30 years.
Can I ask you just a medical question from a non-doctor? And that is, I know that the marrow is the blood factory for the body, but when I see a bone, you know, there's no openings in it.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Yeah, so next time you you eat chicken, just crack the drumstick. And the bone is, you know, the bony part that holds us up is the outside. But the inside, all that mealy red stuff, that's where the chicken is making its red blood cells. And that's the same for humans, where it's inside the bone, not the not the cortex.
But how does it get out?
Oh, it there are blood vessels that are in there, and the blood cells, as they're produced, just pass right into the veins and return to the heart.
All right. Well, you've answered a question I've had all my life.
And so tell us, you were telling us that there were some interesting things going on in Europe, but what about this sort of mystery of aplastic anemia attracted you to it? I mean, you've spent 20 plus years working on this.
Yeah, well, I think the mystery came a bit later, but the clinical results really were what suggested how to solve the mystery, because patients were getting better with this very funny concoction of antibodies that are directed against human immune cells. So the fact that you could treat patients, and two-thirds, even more of them, would get better in a very stereotypical way, meaning that you gave them this antibody collection, and then 2-3 months later, their blood count started to improve. That really suggested to me, and also to other people who are interested in the disease, that the immune system had something to do with why the bone marrow wasn't working. And up until that time, the focus, because patients didn't do well, the focus was all on things like benzene, or maybe they took a drug like chloramphenicol that caused the bone marrow problem. That's what all the questions were by the professors, because then you sent the patient home to die. So there's this speculation, a really idle speculation about what started the disease without thinking about the actual processes beyond whatever this exposure was. So the response of an individual patient was very dramatic, and that still is what drives a lot of our research, is you see how patients behave, and then you work backwards in animal models and in laboratory experiments to figure out why the patient behaved the way they did, for example, got better with this antibody mix.
We're speaking with Dr. Neil Young, chief of the hematology branch at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health. And I wanted to ask you about the NIH, because it is a federal agency, but it somehow seems unique from other federal agencies in the academic work that it does. Is it supportive to people like yourself in the same way that a true academic or full research setting is?
Yeah, it's alike and it's different. It is a very peculiar institution, and we struggle with this all the time, actually, at NIH. So most of the money that goes to medical research, 90% of the money that goes to medical research from the federal government goes outside to academic centers, as you mentioned, true academic centers, in the form of grants and contracts. So an academician will apply for a grant, he writes a research proposal, his peers will judge whether that seems worthy, and then he's funded for some period of time. People like me who work inside outside the NIH have a different system. We are part of the academic environment. I mean, we go to the same meetings, and we're really, I think, indistinguishable in general, the people who actually do science and medicine at NIH from professors elsewhere. But we work on a different system. We don't write grants. We're judged retrospectively, which gives us a lot of freedom, but you also have to be productive. You have to show that you've done something every 4 years that's worthy of the amount of money that's been given you.
And we know that one of your players was the Princeton University football, one of your patients was the Princeton University football player, Jordan Colbreth. Where are your other patients coming from?
Well, they come from all over the world. I mean, literally, we've got people from Nepal and Guatemala and Africa who actually come to a marrow failure clinic and participate in protocols. And of course, the great majority of them are Americans, and they come from all over the United States.
And how have your discoveries on this illness, on aplastic anemia, what do they hold for other diseases, similar diseases, or perhaps other ones that could have the same sort of treatment?
Yeah, so that's a really an important question, because it's important that we're able to actually generalize our information beyond what is still a rare blood disease. I mean, we spend a lot of money doing these clinical protocols, and it's great that patients do better. That's worth itself, but you do want to have things be broader. So I think that it's been in many different directions. I'll just mention two. One is that we think what's going on in aplastic anemia is similar to a lot of other immune-mediated diseases that are pretty common and actually maybe getting more prevalent. So these are diseases like in the bowel, inflammatory bowel disease, type 1 diabetes, uveitis, some forms of liver and lung disease. Those also are caused by immune cells that very specifically attack and destroy the cells of an organ. The other area has to do with the genetics of aplastic anemia, and that's led to discoveries having to do with basic biology and tied together in what are now called the telomere diseases, the lung, the liver, and also the bone marrow. And that's really a whole new set of diseases, relatively common compared to aplastic anemia. And we may be able to treat them effectively by actually going after some basic aspects of the way the cell behaves.
And very quickly, one of your programs for training is located in Vietnam, where you are credited with transforming that country's approach to blood diseases. Tell us about that. We've got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, so we started a program actually before we even had an embassy there back in the 1990s to train Vietnamese physicians in hematology oncology. I would go every year. We gave courses, gave out certificates. And Vietnamese came here, and they've modeled a lot of their systems, a lot of their hospitals on the NIH.
Well, maybe we should call you ambassador.